Hospital stroke fails. Women's concussion recovery. UK paramedics are stressed out. And we'll look at another segment from EMS Today 2015 with a look at traumatic brain injury management in EMFs. If that's what you're looking for, you found it right here on this week's episode of The Medic Cast.
Transmitters? We don't need no stinking transmitters.
This is The Medicast, a podcast for EMS providers by EMS providers, featuring EMS news, products, tips, tricks, and commentary. So grab your gear and glove up. Here's today's show with the pod medic, Jamie Davis.
Well, good day and welcome to this week's episode of The Medic Cast. I'm your host, Jamie Davis, the pod medic, and I'd like to take this opportunity to welcome you to this week's show. In this week's EMS news items, we're going to take a look at a few EMS news items, including one on research on the longer-term effects of concussion on women. Then, in this week's special tip segment, we have another interview from EMS Today back in February, where the team interviewed Dr. Jason McMullen on EMS management of traumatic brain injury. Are you doing the right things to take care of these patients? Well, we're going to find out later on in the show, after the news. Before we get to all that, though, I do want to make sure you check out the information, links, and additional resources available for you over at the MedicCast blog at medicast.com/blog. There's a show notes link at the top of the page. Click that link, and it'll take you right to the most recent episode. And, of course, you can scroll down there and find previous episodes, too. There's also a search box on the page, so if you're looking for something in particular, you can find it right away by putting in some keywords there. But take some time. Make sure you follow up on the information you get on the show each week and understand how it applies to your own EMS practice and protocols. If you want to get back in touch with me, I hope you'll do so. Please get in touch with me by email at podmedic@mac.com. Shoot me an email with your comments, questions on the shows, maybe send me suggestions and interview ideas for future episodes. Either way, I work to respond back to every email that comes in, and I'll get back to you as well, so please keep those emails coming. Also, don't forget all you iPhone, Android, Windows Phone, and Windows 8 users out there, check out the free, that's right, free MedicCast app in your device's store. That's enough contact info. We'll go ahead and get on into this week's show. It's coming right up after the news. Kicking off the news this week, I bring you a story about how rapid recognition and treatment of acute emergency conditions is being missed in many hospitals. Now, you'd think that in the hospital, it's the best place to have a stroke or a heart attack, but you'd be wrong, according to a recent study from the May 4th issue of the Journal of American Medical Association, Neurology. Researchers found that hospital patients admitted for another problem were slow to have new-onset strokes recognized and treated when compared to patients who had strokes out of the hospital. Now, I reported a few months ago on similar findings regarding chest pain and STEMI recognition and treatment for patients not in the hospital for cardiac problems. The authors of the research suggest that all hospitals need to have a standardized algorithm for diagnosing and rapidly treating strokes and other acute emergencies. In patients that are already inside the doors, this is important. The researchers used the Ontario Stroke Registry to look at TIA or stroke patients in designated stroke centers in the province. Now, this was in stroke centers, folks. We know how stroke centers are designated. They're primarily for our action with them as EMS providers handling pre-hospital stroke patients, but you'd think that they'd have some capacity for recognizing and managing new onset stroke inside their own walls, too. The recommendation is for hospitals to implement code stroke teams to rapidly recognize stroke patients and rush them for appropriate imaging and treatment as quickly as possible. How bad was the difference in diagnosis and treatment? Well, imagine this. In-hospital stroke patients waited an average of 4.5 hours for imaging to verify stroke, while at the same time frame for community-based stroke patients was just 1.2 hours to imaging. When every second counts, that's an alarming time difference. So what are the stroke facilities in your area doing to rapidly recognize signs and symptoms of stroke inside the hospital walls? We'll have to check that out. Be ready to come in and do your own stroke education for nurses and staff. talking about stroke recognition with a hospital staff soon. Next up is new research on mild traumatic brain injury or concussions and gender-based differences in management and recovery. Female brains apparently more slowly recover from concussions than male brains, specifically in the recovery of lost memory. The researchers are scratching their heads as to what specifically the difference in the female brain is that makes them more susceptible to this memory issue, but there is clearly something different in the makeup of male and female brains. It does show that you just cannot treat men and women the same following a concussion during the recovery period. Now, this doesn't affect us in EMS directly, I know, but I think it's important information to keep in mind when you might be involved in concussion awareness outreach to your community. Young women involved in contact sports that might get concussions, playing things like soccer or lacrosse, could be managed and should be managed differently and have parents and coaches having different expectations than their male counterparts. The researchers used brain scans of the area of the brain used in working memory or short-term memory. This is the memory we use to process recent events, like remembering the items on a menu before we order food, or the play called for a sporting event. The scan showed that in men, working memory returned to normal baseline within about 6 weeks after concussions. In women, though, the same time frame of 6 weeks, they were still showing differences and effects in short-term memory. There are several theories about why this is a difference and why it exists, including weaker neck muscles in women to support and stabilize the head during a concussion. I'll keep following this and other concussion stories so you always have the most recent information for you, and maybe you'll be sharing this with someone in your community soon. Finally, in EMS news, I have an article about UK EMS services and the challenges facing paramedics there. As call volumes continue to increase and budgetary cutbacks worsen, paramedics on duty there are experiencing extremely high levels of stress, and it's manifesting in their requests for sick time off work. The stress-related requests for time off increased nearly 30% in the last 2 years, a number that is alarming EMS leadership there. The further challenge is that as more paramedics take sick leave and time to recover their mental health, the paramedics left on duty are taking on more of the workload, compounding the problem. According to one expert in the article from TheGuardian.com, paramedics have very real concerns about whether they will be able to remain paramedics until retirement, given the current work environment. David Davis, fellow of the College of Paramedics, wants there to be additional mental health resources for all responders in the station where they work. He says that the increased complexity of their jobs, increased workload, and other stresses are only going to get worse as the UK experiences its own health reform process to address the aging population's healthcare needs. I urge you to actually check out the article for yourself. It's a good in-depth look at the UK paramedic services and the stresses that face all EMS providers worldwide. I also welcome your comments. I know a lot of you in the UK check out the show. What do you think about resources in the workplace for mental health? Is that something that needs to be more front and center, especially here in the US too? Let me know. You can leave a comment over at medicast.com/blog or shoot me an email on this or any of our shows and stories this week. I really look forward to hearing from you. At EMS Today, at the conference there back in Baltimore in February, some truly amazing speakers got to address the crowds of EMS providers there. In the Physio Control podcast studio, I got the chance to sit down and interview Dr. Jason McMullen about what EMS providers and others need to know about traumatic brain injury. How EMS responds to incidences of traumatic brain injury can literally be a matter of life and death. So check out what Dr. McMullen says about what we can do for these at-risk patients. Hi, Hi, Jamie Davis, the Pod Medic here from the MedicCast and EMS Today 2015, and we want to thank everybody for checking us out here in the Physio Control Podcast Studio. And thanks to Physio Control for making it possible for us to be here and capturing some of these great interviews and segments from the conference speakers and attendees. So I have Dr. Jason McMullen here with us, and we're going to talk a little bit about traumatic brain injury. And before we get to that, though, just tell us a little bit about your background, who you are, and where you got started and where you are right now.
Sure. So I cut my teeth as a volunteer EMT outside Charlotte, North Carolina, almost 2 decades ago.
Wow.
Now. I was never smart enough to be a paramedic, so I went to medical school instead, but never lost that pre-hospital vibe. So I am now at University of Cincinnati. I'm part of the Office of the Medical Director for Cincinnati Fire and several other EMS agencies around the Cincinnati area, and I also oversee EMS research for the University of Cincinnati. I got to tell you, TBI I'm very passionate about because it's the one thing that I fear most.
Really?
Yes.
So what, TBI you fear more than penetrating trauma or
100%.
Brush injury or blast injuries?
Why? Absolutely. So if you look at the overall mortality from trauma, you're looking in the 1 to 5% range. If you look at the overall mortality between with trauma and TBI, 30%. And
wow.
Of the 70% who live, many of them are devastated in the prime of their life. And for me, I value my personal independence and able to attend to my activities of daily living, and suffering TBI, it might hurt that. The other thing, and this is what's frustrating to me professionally and why I really look at this from an education and from a research standpoint, is that for penetrating trauma, we can help you, right? Needle decompression, some permissive hypotension, we got you, right? We can take care of you. Crush injury, blast injury, we can put on tourniquets, we can treat compartment syndrome and hyperkalemia. What can we do for TBI?
I have no idea. I'm hoping you can tell me, because that's my next question is, you know, what is there interventionally
there,
that we can do to manage any of that?
So as field providers, we can recognize and we can react and we can transport in the most expeditious fashion to the most appropriate facility, but we have no cure. There have been, there's one of my mentors, one of his favorite lines is that there is a graveyard full of neuroprotectant agents and treatments for TBI that have all failed in
Wow.
clinical trials. What can we do as medicine? Well, there's intensive neurocritical care, which can help you out. And there's obviously neurosurgeons who can take off part of your skull to help relieve some of the swelling and improve your recovery. But as far as in the field, can't do it.
Can't do it. And I'll put my nurse's cap on here, but prevention obviously would be the biggest key. And EMSA organizations should be an active participant in prevention programs because of the fact that once an injury occurs, there's very little that even can be done at the hospital to take care of that.
You're right. And, you know, from a pure public health perspective, seatbelt laws that are near universal, helmet laws that are not in every state, and I'll get on my soapbox, I don't know why. Right,
but I don't know why either.
Helmet saves lives, no matter if you're on a skateboard or a bicycle or a moped, a motorized wheelchair or a motorcycle. Right, they help. So in car accidents and such, we can. But the biggest risk factors for TBI, I kind of refer to them as the T's. Right, testosterone, as we do stuff.
Yes.
Toothlessness, tattoos, the ever-important tooth-to-tattoo ratio.
Oh, my goodness.
And ETOH, right? Because there's nothing more predictive that a TBI is about to happen than the words, hold my beer, watch this. All right? So until we can put a helmet on every man between the ages of 13 and 55, prevention can only go so far.
Well, yeah, you're right. I mean, I think some of us in EMS have called that job security.
Yep.
You know, if it wasn't for people like that, we wouldn't have anything to do on our afternoons. But on the other side of it is, you know, it is a severe problem, and it is something that recognition is the key. So let's go back a step and say, how do we recognize? What are we looking for with traumatic brain injury?
Right. So I'm gonna get back on a soapbox. Forever, like in every EMT class, some of my mentors and the wisest and brightest, I mean, I came out of the state of North Carolina, so you got to forgive me if I'm a little bit simple, right?
Yep.
However, forever in all the classes, you hear about diagnosis based off of head CT, right? This is an epidural hematoma. This is a subdural hematoma. Well, unless you're in Austin, Texas, or Cleveland, where they actually have CT scanners in the back of the ambulances, mm-hmm. we will never make those diagnoses. And instead, we're left with a GCS. Now, I can tell you that all too often, the GCS, when I ask for it from a report, and not me, because I'm perfect when I'm a field provider, but people that I know, what's the GCS? And they go, nine. Not helpful, right? In fact, when you look at how the GCS was created, it was created for head-injured Scotsmen. It was done, supposed to be measured after initial stabilization or resuscitation, which is not us, and it was never meant to be summed. It was meant to simply be an objective rating scale of what the eyes are doing, the verbal is doing, the motor is doing.
Okay.
So we're left with an imperfect way of doing things, but GCS is the best that we have for now. More importantly, how I like to try to address this is to treat it as altered mental status in the setting of trauma. It's too long to say, so we'll just kind of say TBI. But you've got to remember, this person could still be hypoglycemic. They could still be postictal. They could still have had a cardiac arrest and a dysrhythmia, right? And there's multiple medical things that could have gone on that either caused or is a sequelae of the injury. So we got to treat the entire patient and not just focus on massive head wound area over here, right? But when we suspect it, you first got to step back and say, all right, this person is obtunded. Does their condition match the injury? We've all been on that low-speed car accident on the highway where the person's in cardiac arrest. And that's because their cardiac arrest happened before the accident, right? They're not dead. It's not a traumatic arrest. So you still have to have those thoughts. And then during your assessment, if you think they have TBI, treat it as potential TBI. Now, what's kind of heartbreaking is that it's 2015 now, mm-hmm. right? 8 years ago, co-published in pre-hospital emergency care were the guidelines for pre-hospital TBI care by the Brain Trauma Foundation. Same rigorous guidelines, the same way that ACLS and PALS and everything else goes. We don't know them. In fact, when we kind of looked at regional protocols that had them, none of the 61 that we looked at did they actually follow all the protocols. Only two had at least 70% of the recommendations followed in there. And these are not big, fancy things, right? These are simple things like defining hypoxia and stating avoid it. So anything less than 90% is associated with worse outcomes. Avoid hypotension. If you avoid prophylactic hyperventilation. Now, I remember when I was taught years ago, everyone got bagged down. No, because hyperventilation, for every drop that you have in your end-tunnel CO2, is a 4% reduction in your cerebral blood flow. That means if I drop that end-tunnel CO2 number by 5, I cut the blood flow to your brain by 20%. Now, if you're herniating, if your brain is being squeezed out of the bottom of your skull, I want to make those blood vessels smaller to keep third grade inside, right? But let's say that you're just postictal, right? Or that you've got a bad but not fatal head injury, and now I bag you way down. I'm essentially strangling you en route. That's no good. So we got to monitor what we do. And then there's some simple things, right? Use gravity as your friend. In the hospitals, we call head of bed elevation, right? Put the head above the heart, venous drainage, and that helps with your pressure, right? Now, the ideal is 30 degrees. On a backboard, that means the head of the bed is 3 feet high. That ain't gonna happen. But throw a gear bag or your boots or a junior firefighter under the head of the backboard when it's on the stretcher and prop it up, right? Pay attention to your C-collar. Mm-hmm. If your C-collar is too tight, it may be protecting your spine, right? But it's certainly going to limit the blood outflow from your head. Make sure that it is appropriate fitting and not too tight.
Right.
These are simple things that we can do today.
Today.
And the other is to just recognize and then take them to a center that can take care of them. Anyone can take care of the person who's drunk and fell down and hit their head, right? Not everyone can take care of the person who has an expanding epidural hematoma and problems with intracranial pressure. So call your helicopter if that's your fastest way, or if it's not your fastest way, just boot scoot it on down to your trauma center where they can take care of the patient.
Great. Well, Jason, this is something we could probably talk about for a long period of time.
And, I talked about it for 2 hours yesterday. Yep.
But it's something that all of us need to be more knowledgeable about. And like you said, there are protocols for treatment out there. We just need to adopt them and integrate them into our own systems.
Yep. So if you do nothing else, Google 2007 Brain Trauma Foundation guidelines. Make sure you pick the pre-hospital version, the in-hospital or the military version. And there's your template right there.
Right there. Great. Well, thank you very much for being on the show. Appreciate it.
All right, sir.
Thank you.
Right.
And I want to thank all of you for checking out this episode here from EMS Today 2015. I'm Jamie Davis, the pod medic from MedicCast.tv. You can find all of the episodes from EMS Today over there and, of course, over at EMSToday.com. That's going to wrap up this week's episode of the MedicCast. I want to thank all of you for checking out the show this week and, of course, remind you to follow up on all of the information you get in this week's show over at the MedicCast blog. That's at MedicCast.com/blog. Over there, you'll find a show notes link at the top of the page. Go ahead and take a moment and follow up on all of the information and links to news items and more you find there each week. You can also sign up for our email newsletter that'll bring you those links directly into your email inbox each week if you want. There's a form on the right-hand side of the page. Just go ahead and fill that out, and you can get the MedicCast newsletter for yourself. I also welcome your comments and suggestions by email. So if you want to get back in touch with me, shoot me an email to podmedic@mac.com. Send in your ideas for news links, ideas for future show topics or interviews, whatever comments you might have. I really do look forward to hearing from you, and I'll make sure I get back to you. I work hard to respond back to every email that comes in, so please keep those emails coming. If you want to catch up with me on social media and some of the pages and sites out there, you can find me at most places under the handle PodMedic. So you can catch me over at Twitter at twitter.com/PodMedic or Facebook at facebook.com/PodMedic. Friend or follow me over there. Also, don't forget to check out our MedicCast Facebook page. We now have over 5,000 followers, so head over to facebook.com/MedicCast. Click the like button on the top of the page and join the community over there. That's going to wrap up this week's episode of the MedicCast. Please make sure you spread the word and share the MedicCast with your colleagues and students and friends in the EMS world. I'll be back here each week with new episodes, new interviews, news items, tips, and more every Monday morning to start off your EMS week. Tell somebody else about the MedicCast today. I'm Jamie Davis, the Pod Medic. It's time to close out the show. Don't forget to thank our sponsors. And remember, folks, Scene Safety, BSI.